The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Beyond the box score, the advanced guys are back. Dan and Gibbs are here. They took last week off. Pretty lame. But Frank and I held down the fort. And now welcome back to Jacob. Well, really welcome back to Jacob. What's up, Jacob?
I am glad to be back, man. You and Frank killed it last week. I was I didn't know who was coming on, and I was thrilled to see Frank. He always does such a great job. So, yeah,
oh, thanks,
glad we got
man.
A good feeling.
And Dan, you know, I'm sure today's Halloween. You're going to go trick-or-treating. You're going to get candy, and you're going to eat just the inferior parts of every candy.
Yeah, that's my go-to. That's my MO, and I've accepted that. It's certainly better than my music takes, which are even more god-awful. But I will say this. Luckily for Jacob and I, we did take last week off because we were planning a dual threat victory lap on Adam for 4 weeks now, calling that you should stash Wandale Robinson. Then he has his breakout last week, and then we were going to give you some hard times for that, Adam, because Adam did astutely now say, you can't trust anyone in that Giants passing game. You can't trust him as every guy. And of course, as we saw, everyone fired him up for their lineups this week in the flex spot. And some people even in their wide receiver three, and he dropped an absolute goose egg, essentially a goose egg on you. So we can't take that lap anymore. No, Adam can take that lap.
I appreciate your hall of shame lap that you're taking right now. I do appreciate that.
Sometimes you got to give credit where it's due.
You know, I was going to say this is the first week of the year that neither the Giants or the Chiefs won, but it's actually not true. They both lost in week three. Of course, they both didn't lose in week eight. The Chiefs were on a bye, and when they come back from their bye, they will have Kadarius Toney. That'll be one of the news items we highlight. It is Halloween, so happy Halloween to everybody. I don't know which YouTube poll we have up, but I am very excited to see it right now, so I'm going to check that out. Thomas Schaefer is the best in the business at that for sure. I have a Halloween costume question that I will ask you guys later. Here's the question on YouTube. What do you do with leftover Halloween candy? Eat it later, bring it to work, throw it away, or what leftover candy? More on that in a bit. Let's get into the game from last night here. We've got, obviously, the advanced stats that you need to know, the five big topics we have today, DeAndre Swift's workload, running back versus wide receiver right now, which position is better, Dak Prescott, and his outlook, the Raiders and the dud. I have a great theory on the Raiders. I'm nailing this theory on the Raiders later. And DJ Moore, is he a must-start wide receiver as long as PJ Walker is his quarterback, which will once again be the case in week 9. Buffalo 27, Green Bay 17. Jacob, what did you think of Sunday Night Football? Any big takeaways? It was actually the worst game of the year for Josh Allen. Any big takeaways from you?
No, there wasn't a whole lot. Romeo Dubs looked good and played a lot. I was a little bit worried. There were some kind of weird quotes from Aaron Rodgers after last week, and I thought that might be him that was going to, you know, see a dip in playing time, but that's not the case. He saw a ton of air yards and converted that to a good game. The other thing I would note is that James Cook is clearly playing ahead of Zach Moss. We've seen that for two straight weeks. So if something happens to Devin Singletary, I think it's going to be Cook. Probably in a tandem with Moss, but probably leading the way, which is all that I think would really need for him to be pretty good for fantasy.
Yeah, no Alan Lazard in this game, so that probably helped Romeo Dobbs. He's 58% rostered. He had 7 targets. He had 2 big plays. One of them was in the end zone. This was after a 0 catch game on 4 targets at Washington, and it was nice to see him get going. He was only started in 10% of leagues. We'll talk about him on the waiver wire show. I can't just assume that Alan Lazard's going to be back this upcoming week. He had that shoulder injury, so we'll see. They're at Detroit this week. Schneier, what about you? Big takeaways from this game?
Jacob stole my thunder a little bit on the James Cook thing, but I'm happy he did bring it up. Zach Moss, that's 2 weeks in a row without any snaps now. Cook has clearly moved ahead of him on the depth chart, and Cook displayed, in my mind at least, from just rewatching that game a little bit, some of the trademarks of his game from a trait standpoint that got me really excited about his film at Georgia. Just the ability to press the line of scrimmage, have that like innate sense for where the cutback lane is, which is what something, you know, his brother Dalvin does such an excellent job on. And he's a really smooth mover in the open field. So I think that if he did actually get an opportunity, if Singletary went down, he could be a potential high-end RB2, back-end RB1. So that was one of my key takeaways. Another thing is, don't panic on Gabe Davis. This is kind of the player he's going to be for us this year, this boomer bust type player, but you're not going to want to miss him in your lineup for the big weeks. And just understand that a big reason why he had such a bad day in fantasy was based on the way that the Packers played the Bills schematically. They wanted to keep everything in front of them. You can see, obviously, the Bills ran the ball way more often than they have in the past or than they even want to. This is not a team that wants to be a run-first team at all from an offensive standpoint. And so, look, if you're taking away the deep play, it's going to be tough for Gabe Davis to have his big weeks. There will be weeks, though, where you can look into it beforehand, maybe, Adam, and be like, okay, this is the type of matchup you don't want to play, Davis. And that's something maybe we can do a better job taking a deeper look into, depending on what.
Yeah, I have taken a deeper look into it. Yeah. This was on paper the toughest matchup that Gabe Davis has in the next, I'd say, month. The other teams that he's going to play are not as good in the secondary. And you're also, you know, I emailed you guys a stat from ESPN about Jair Alexander. Jair Alexander is one of the best cornerbacks in football, and he was on Gabe Davis for 61% of Gabe Davis's routes. He was barely on Stephon Diggs, but Davis saw a lot of Jair Alexander, and he had seven targets for the game. He had four with Alexander targeting him, and he didn't catch any of them. covering him as the nearest defender. So I think that's the big thing here, combined with 25 pass attempts for Allen, which is low, combined with 13 completions, and just kind of a disappointing game for Josh Allen. One of the interceptions that he threw was to Gabe Davis at the one-yard line. So, I'm not panicking on Davis. Yes, he'll be a little inconsistent, but this was a combination of a lot of things that went wrong for Gabe Davis. I think number one, Packers defense and Jair Alexander specifically.
Yeah.
Aaron Jones looks like he's back. I mean, there's no way you're sitting Aaron Jones at this point.
No shot. They're running the offense through him like they should have.
Yeah.
All year.
All right. I mean, that's pretty. Aaron Rodgers has scored 19 to 21 fantasy points in six of his last seven games. It's just where he lives.
Yep. And that's pretty solid into that QB2 range these days.
Yeah, you could do worse.
Yeah.
All right. We've got some merchandise if you want to buy some stuff. We help you dominate your league, hopefully. You can help us out by repping Fantasy Football Today. Go to our merchandise store. Go to the CBS Sports store. T-shirts, mugs, sweatpants, hoodies, laser-engraved pint glasses, hats, water bottles. All that stuff to remind your buddies of how you dominate your league. FFT sent you, basically. And we can get you 20% off. You go to the store. I'll tell you how to get there. But the code is FantasyFootball20. Only for our listeners, FantasyFootball20. Use that at checkout. Get 20% off your order. And basically, I think I'll put a link in the episode description if I remember. But if I don't, please just go to Google or Bing and type in CBS Sports Store, Fantasy Football Today. That's all you got to do. You'll find it. Buy some stuff. Fantasy Football 20 for 20% off.
Who uses Bing?
Oh, there's a lot of Bingers out there.
There's no shot.
I was just watching Friends.
I can't even believe that was the second search engine you went to.
It was a Chandler episode, so I was just, you know, Bing. Nah, it was a joke, Dan. News and notes. Jonathan Taylor twisted his ankle, so we got to check on him. There was just an update on it. We'll call him questionable right now. They're at New England, and Nyheim Hines could be someone you want to get. Cooper Kupp also hurt his ankle. That was late in the game, final minutes, and we'll go from there. Hopefully not a big deal. But for many of you, those could have been the top two picks in fantasy drafts. Taylor and Kupp both banged up. Jamar Chase not going on IR. Mark Ingram is going to miss several weeks with a sprained MCL. Irv Smith, high ankle sprain. Devontae Parker left on the opening possession, but not a serious injury. Could be back this week. Could be back maybe in 2 weeks. I think they have a bye in 2 weeks. Eagles defensive tackle Jordan Davis, high ankle sprain. Christian Watson, concussion. Packers linebacker Devondre Campbell left in the second quarter. They also lost another starting linebacker who pushed one of the coaches last night. He got ejected. The Cardinals play without three starting offensive linemen. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. Bills safety Jordan Poyer left with an elbow injury, and he said he heard a pop. So that could be really devastating for them. They've already lost Micah Hyde for the season. I mean, that's a huge deal. And Poyer and Hyde both being out for extended times, that could be significant. They're at the Jets this week. That's pretty much it. It was a pretty light week. Oh, Kadarius Toney's going to, seems like he's going to play this week. He's healthy. They got Tennessee coming off the bye, and PJ Walker is going to start for the Carolina Panthers. Okay, guys, let's dig into the stats a little bit here. Jacob, where should we begin?
How about Kyle Pitts?
Hey.
Kyle Pitts, DJ Moore, like we've got some hope on some of these guys that, you know, we were just in a pit of despair a couple weeks ago. 27 routes run on 31 dropbacks for Kyle Pitts, dominated the target share. Weirdly, his air yardage was way down, but I think that's just a one game thing. But if we can get that, you know, route involvement rate up around 85% where it was, you know, here, like that is great. He's probably going to be a top five tight end. If we can get that, you know, it's tough. But also they dropped back 31 times, which is much better than what we'd seen the week prior.
All they needed was almost a full overtime.
Yeah, that's fair.
but yeah, and you know what? I think he's had an end zone target in three straight games, I think. And one of them may not have counted because he drew a penalty. But that is someone that Mariota's looking at in the end zone. Yeah. You can give me another one, Jacob. We'll go to Dan. Yeah. Dan will get plenty of, like, Dan's, you know. Dan's
another
got
tight end. Yeah. Greg Dulcich, route involvement rate was up to 91%.
Damn it, you stole my Dulcich take. This is Adam's fault. I had a chance here. I was going there next. I'll give you the credit, though. You know what? This is on Adam. This is on Adam.
I take full responsibility.
You should.
So his route involvement rate hadn't been above 80% in any of his first two games, even though he'd been pretty productive. So it's just exciting to see him running route on almost every single dropback. And he looks great. He looks really, really good.
Yes.
And so he's exciting. I think he's legitimately probably somebody viewing as a top 10, top 12 tight end going forward. And then if we want to stay in that game, Jerry Jeudy, earlier in the year, I kind of conceded that Adam, you know, maybe you were right on Cortland Sutton, but things do not look good for Sutton lately. And we now have almost 500 career routes run together with Sutton and Jeudy, and Judy's completely dominated. He has 178 PPR points in that split. Sutton has 91. He has 932 receiving yards to Sutton's 425. And some people have replied and said, you know, he was hurt. A lot of those routes came last year when Sutton was in his first year coming off the ACL, which is fair. But if you just look at the routes run together in 2022, Jeudy has out-targeted him. He has 431 receiving yards to Sutton's 297. He has 90 PPR points to Sutton's 61. He looks like the wide receiver one when they're both healthy. I don't know.
It's a great debate. And Heath brought up, you know, that he's had two games where he's got 20, you know, fewer than 20 yards, but he played 14% of the snaps in one of them. He played 59% snaps in the other. So in the other six games, 84% or more of the snaps, and he has just been mostly better than Cortland Sutton. So, you know, that is something to consider. I don't know. Like the first five games of the year, two of them he did get hurt. Sutton averaged, I just had this somewhere. It's actually at the bottom of my notes here. Sutton averaged 83.4 yards and Jeudy averaged 47.2. Now Jeudy was more like probably in the 70-ish range. If you take away the games where he was hurt, but I don't know. I mean, like, shouldn't Russell Wilson be good enough to make both of them good? Right. Why does it have to be just one or the other? I guess is
the other thing I would say is I feel like Dulcich, I don't know how much tight end routes and targets necessarily affect the wide receiver target distribution, but Dulcich does run routes that are a little bit more similar to Sutton in terms of where he's right. going to be targeted.
Yeah, but he has like seven targets or something. Well, he had four targets in this game. No, he had five. And he has eight targets in two games with Russell Wilson. So I don't think that's why Sutton's struggling.
Yeah. Are you saying Sutton has eight targets?
Sorry. Thank you for making me clarify. Dulcich has eight targets in two games with Russell Wilson. He had nine targets in the one game with Brett Rypien. But
yeah, all I'm saying is that the player he's replacing, like Albert O and Eric Saubert, like are running very short routes and drawing targets that are a little bit more similar to Jeudy, whereas Dulcich's are a lot more similar to Sutton.
So who would you rather have rest of season, guys, Jeudy or Sutton?
Jeudy for sure for me.
Yeah, Jeudy for me as well.
All right. All right, Dan, you're up.
All right, a few more I want to throw out there. I want to start with the one that stood out the most to me, and that would be Rondale Moore, as he's kind of clearly taken over right now as that number two option with the Cardinals. We tossed back and forth a few weeks ago what DeAndre Hopkins' return might mean for Rondale Moore in that Arizona passing game. But ultimately, although the snaps where they do line up Hopkins in the slot is not good for Moore, when they have Hopkins on the outside, it's clearly a good thing for Rondale Moore. It takes away defensive attention, and it opens up the middle of the field for Rondale Moore, who's now had a 95% route participation over the last four games, including two of those, obviously, with DeAndre Hopkins. He has at least eight targets in three of those four games, so the volume is there, too, for him. And I just think, ultimately, while we were debating it back and forth for a little while, the addition of Hopkins is actually a really good thing for Rondale Moore. And he's someone who I can kind of trust as a back-end flex or back-end wide receiver three moving forward. Another player I wanted to bring up potentially, or any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, it's all about the slot. I mean, that's just right. Whether it's been Dorsch or whether it's been Rondale Moore, he barely played in the slot 2 weeks ago in a terrible game. But A.J. Green didn't play. A.J. Green played right outside. Moore played in the slot in week eight. And, you know, look, he broke a tackle for a big play and scored a touchdown. But I think you're looking at something like 5-6 catches for 60-something yards, you know, maybe, you know, like a 10 to 13 PPR fantasy point kind of player. And he's my number one waiver wire priority, I think, this week, if he's available in any leagues. All he has to do is play the slot. It's been extremely valuable. I say it so often. I'm sorry for repeating myself, but that's the main difference between week seven and week eight. Week seven, he was outside the entire game. Week eight, he played mostly in the slot, and that's where Kyler Murray's been throwing.
Yep. 100%.
And average depth of target back down to 1.3 yards.
Yeah. It'll never reach those historic lows of his rookie season. I don't think it even was in the negatives, right? Or it was damn close to the negatives. Yeah. I mean, it hopefully won't ever reach that historic low.
Dear
but again,
God,
yeah.
He ran 77 routes? Or he played 77 yeah snaps in week eight. My goodness. So yeah, he did play a lot in the slot, but it wasn't as lopsided as I thought. It was 45 slot, 30 wide. And two backfield. Wow, that's a lot of plays they ran.
Can we talk about what DeAndre Hopkins is doing?
Yeah,
he's the man.
He has a 30% target share and a 50% heritage share in each of the two games since he's been back, which I didn't have the time to like see which players have done that, but I bet there's only a handful of players who have even done that in two or more games on
ever
the season.
Yeah,
and he's done it in both of his games since he's returned. It's the offense is running completely through him. Like his first down target per route run rate is like 40 or 50%. Like he has a 58% air yard share since he's returned. Like,
While we're on the subject, right? Marquise Brown might be roughly 3 weeks away from returning. So what does that mean for these guys going forward?
This is like top five fantasy receiver stuff from Hopkins. Like and the production has been there. Like he looks good. Like we've seen his per route splits have been kind of troublesome the last few years, but I think it maybe was that he's been hurt because he looks pretty good right now.
That's what it is. I think he's been playing hurt for a while. Now he's finally fully healthy again. And you're seeing what he's out there, but the addition of Brown, like Adams asked, like, what does that do for the offense? I still think it will run through Hopkins, even once Brown gets back. I think Brown was kind of serving that role that Hopkins is now playing because out of necessity, the Cardinals didn't really have any other option. Now they feel comfortable, a lot more comfortable with Hopkins in. So I would think that it still would run through Hopkins.
Okay. All right, Schneier, give me another.
Okay, another interesting thing that stood out to me was Christian McCaffrey. Kind of, a lot of people were kind of skeptical. Oh, he gets traded to the 49ers. Before the trade, the 49ers only had 18 total receptions on the year to running backs. That was scary looking. They had used multiple backs in the past, but it's that it was pretty obvious when they made a trade with all that draft capital, they weren't going to trade for him to sit on the bench. And this is one of the best coaches in the NFL. He was going to find a role for him. So he played 81% of the snaps. He had 79% of the attempts, a wild 72% route participation number that stood out to me with a 35% target share. Now, obviously, Deebo Samuel is out, so we have to consider that, and that could change. I don't expect him to have a 35% target share every game, but anywhere close to those numbers is going to be big for him. 100% of the short yardage plays he was in on and 100% of the inside the 10-yard line plays he was in on. So I think what I'm seeing from McCaffrey now is he's most likely going to be my number one player overall going forward. I really like the fit. I really like the coaching staff. I really like that he's in on all these plays and they're actually finding ways to immediately get him involved in an offense that he just picked up 2 weeks ago.
And I think it's going to be an interesting offense because I think Deebo, Kittle, and Ayuk are going to frustrate the heck out of you. And especially Deebo, because just because of his name, you're never going to want to sit him.
Right.
And I look, I could be totally wrong about this, but it's just my guess. It's like a better version of the Steelers. The Steelers spread it around. They've got three wide receivers and a tight end who's involved, and then a running back who's kind of involved in the passing game as well. It's similar. It's two wide receivers and a tight end and a running back who's much more involved in the passing game for the 49ers. But I don't think if they're all healthy, McCaffrey to me is the only one who's going to be consistently good. I don't know. And honestly, like Debo hasn't really been consistently good right. this year. He's been consistently fine, but he's hasn't come even close to last year's production. So I'm nervous. You know, I think McCaffrey's the center of the offense now. Debo used to be. But
I completely agree.
Right? We don't know. I mean, look, like you said, Debo didn't play. Maybe this is the best McCaffrey's going to be. Maybe he's 80% of this with Debo. Well, not 80% of 40 fantasy points, but 80% of this type of usage with Debo Samuel. I don't know. But you're kind of where I'm leaning, Dan.
I'm definitely leaning toward that being him being the most consistent player within this offense. I still think you're going to, like you said, want to start these guys week to week. But I was expecting like a huge Kittle week this week, for example. I thought it set up really nicely for Kittle to have a huge week, and he just didn't. And we're just going
to see. He caught a touchdown.
He did catch a touchdown, but I was thinking like big, big, big week. But,
he had a tough matchup. You know, I don't know if you saw my tweet. Oh, two tight ends over the last 18 games have caught a touchdown against the Rams, and they are both George Kittle.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a great stat. I did not see that stat. Not even just the matchup. I just felt like it was a good setup without Debo. But as we noticed, you know, a lot of those targets went through McCaffrey instead.
And I want to talk about Garoppolo because he's done something that he's never done before. He's thrown two touchdown passes in four straight games for the first time in his career. He had never scored 20 or more fantasy points in three straight games in 6 point per passing touchdown leagues. Now he's done it four straight times. He's got they have a bye this week? Yeah, they have a bye this week. Chargers, Cardinals, Saints, Dolphins. It's not like a bad schedule or anything. He's, I'm guessing, going to be what he has been so far. He's a top 16 quarterback. He's 16th per game in 4 point, 15th in 6 point per passing touchdown leagues. Never, almost never has a big three touchdown, 30 point week. You just don't get that from Garoppolo. It's kind of like Aaron Rodgers, though, right around 20 fantasy points. So good for him.
I will say this about Garoppolo. I got to throw a little shade. Last night, this was a great stat courtesy of Ben Solak. I was just such a good stat. I have to throw it out there. He completed his first pass ever, Adam and Jacob. That was 30 plus yards, air yards.
He's never,
outside the numbers.
He's never a good quarterback.
His second game as a 49er.
That's incredible. But he's never, it's not about, oh, he's so good. No, it's just, he's never had this type of weaponry.
True.
So
with a healthy Debo, I mean, is this the best set of weapons in the NFL potentially?
With Jamar Chase out, yeah.
Yeah, with Chase out, right, yeah.
Right, I don't know, maybe I'm missing some. Eagles have something to say for that, I guess.
Maybe. Yeah. I think I'd rather have this group than the Eagles just based on McCaffrey alone.
I know you guys have a lot more stats you probably want to get to. Jacob? Or no?
I will say like Indy, I think Dan hit on this 2 weeks ago. They went to this like no huddle, you know, much faster pace of play, a ton of shotgun. And I think that was just, they were trying to like save things with Matt Ryan. they completely went away from that.
Yeah.
And the big change is that Ellinger, if he's going to continue to be the starting quarterback, he just throws downfield way more and he takes way longer to throw. His average time to throw is 3 seconds. That's basically what we saw from identically at Texas as well. And in the preseason. And that's going to be like one of the top five rates in the NFL. And that definitely stands to benefit Alec Pierce. The other two guys, Michael Pittman and Paris Campbell, have been used really on short routage type of looks. And I thought that might change for Pittman with Ellinger at QB, but it didn't. So it's, I don't know if it's a great fit for those guys, but it does look good for Pierce.
I try not to take too much out of, you know, just one game, his first game. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we've talked about Wandale Robinson, his first game, he had those four targets. That was 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, whatever. And he had a, you know, good route depth and ADOT and whatever. And then it completely changed the next week. So we'll be monitoring Indianapolis. I just think it's bad for everyone, I think. But I think, you know, Heath agrees. They just threw the ball a lot less. Pittman had a 40% target share. That's probably not going to happen again. All right, here's some other things real quick. Tyler Conklin had four end zone targets. That was the most in the NFL in week 8. Terrace Marshall had 3. AJ Brown had 3. Marshall's interesting from a deep league perspective. Tyler Higbee, guys, I don't know what you make of this. He is not running nearly as many routes. The last 2 weeks, He has run 20 routes and 14 routes. The 2 weeks before that, he ran 47 and 37. So
he left the game with an injury.
But he played 49 snaps. Like, he played a lot. And his target per route run rate was 36%, a season high. But that's because he wasn't running very many routes. So I don't know what's going on with Higbee 2 weeks in a row.
They also use a lot of three receiver sets. But yeah, I think that maybe they're just using him more as a blocker. I haven't looked into that yet.
All right, we'll try to keep an eye on that. Ty Johnson was the third down back for the Jets. I mean, Michael Carter still had seven targets, but that's not a good situation right now. Robbie Anderson only played seven snaps. AJ Green played 37 snaps. Good trade. I know, Jacob, you're going to like this one. Antonio Gibson had four carries and six targets on first down. Brian Robinson had three carries and zero targets on first down. So it was a little bit flipped. Like week seven, Robinson was a little more involved on first down, but week eight, it was Gibson by a mile.
That's interesting.
So something to keep an eye on there, trending in that direction there for Gibson. And that's pretty much it. And good games for Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, and neither of them played 75%. Neither of them played 70% of the snaps. They both were a little bit limited, and they came through, and Geno Smith was good.
I will say Tampa Bay is just like this. Maybe you already talked about this Thursday night game, but Tampa Bay is throwing way more over these last two games. We've seen it back-to-back games where they've thrown on 70%+ of their first downs, whereas the only game that had happened prior was that game against Kansas City where they completely abandoned the run. But their other games, the rates were 36%, 24%, 66%, 64%, and 48%. It's been 78 and 73% the last two games. So it seems like maybe they're going away from Fournette and the slow play a little bit and opening things up. Brady has not looked good. He's not played well. But if we get this type of volume for Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, those two are third and fourth in targets, just raw targets over the past 2 weeks. Those guys are studs. They're going to be like, that's kind of been the problem for Evans, like up to this point, is like they're just not passing enough, but the offense is kind of more concentrated on them and they're passing more. And so like the framework is there for them to really, if Brady plays better, if Tampa Bay figures things out at all, like to really explode in the second half.
I think they got to run the ball more. I don't know why they went away from it. It's like, I know Fournette's not good per carry, but I thought on the first drive of the game on Thursday that they ran the ball pretty effectively. And I think you're getting too many third and longs. I'd have to look into that, but like they're just too predictable and they have bad offensive line and an immobile quarterback. It's kind of like Matt Ryan. It's like, I don't know. I don't know why they abandoned I knew why they abandoned the run against the Chiefs. I don't know why they did it on who do they play on Thursday? I forget.
Baltimore.
I don't know why they abandoned the run against the Ravens. And
I don't either.
I'm still not entirely convinced that Godwin is himself. He had that catch early in the game where he had some nice burst after the catch. It looks pretty fast, but I don't know, man. He should be doing a lot better than this. He's so inefficient right now. Just makes you wonder.
Part of it is his average depth of target is like 3 yards.
Yeah. Right. And his route depth is down too. And that's why I'm wondering, is he the same guy? Or I have no way of answering that. Yeah. But
couple other quick notes I want to throw out there, specifically some good positive signs coming from the Jaguars offense. Travis Etienne on the field for 57 of the 72 total snaps. He ran almost every single route except for two, finished with 27 touches. Hasty was kind of the RB2 over Connor. I know there's a lot of, you know, suggestions on who you should stash of those two. I still think you should stash Hasty based on injury, but we're seeing what a lot of people got hyped about in the preseason when it comes to ETN. The Jaguars are actually committing to him in a bell cow role. This is bell cow role, I should say. This is something we don't see from a lot of backs in the NFL, that kind of snap share, that kind of route participation, and then the overall touches. So I think ETN has a real shot to be a top 10, top 12 type of running back for sure over the rest of the season.
Take it, Taylor or ETN?
Jonathan Taylor? Oh, man. I'm thinking about it. We're at the point where I'm thinking about it because the Colts offense is so ineffective. And now Taylor's playing through another ankle injury. So I don't know. I have to think about that. I think I might actually lean ETN, which is crazy to even consider.
No, it's not. At this stage. I mean, I'll take ETN.
Yeah.
I would take Taylor. I'm worried about ETN handling 24 rushing attempts.
I see what you're saying. Just like the longevity factor of it, Jacob.
I wish that they would, get him out in space more, get him more targets. I have him with 20 routes run on 35 dropbacks.
Okay, I actually have 23 of 35, so that stat was actually off earlier. We might have had a little bit different.
I should have just thrown it to Jacob.
Well, what did I say? I read it as 33 of 35, but it was 23 of 35. Still a really high route participation, though.
All right. Can we take a break? Or do you have one more?
The only other one I wanted to say was Evan Engram ran 100% of the routes for the Jaguars. He is now officially running every route for them. He is somebody who I think is, if you're not going to get Dulcich this week on the waiver wire, if he's gone, I would try to get Evan Engram as kind of your back end tight end.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll check in on our Halloween poll. I will ask you a Halloween costume question. We'll talk about some other scary things like DeAndre Swift's workload and the Raiders offense. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, welcome back to Beyond the Box Score here, and this is what we really want to talk about. What do you do with leftover Halloween candy? One, eat it later. Two, bring it to work. Three, throw it away. Or four, what leftover candy? Which is in second place. What do you do? Yeah, eat it later, right? I mean, eat it later is running away with it. 54% of the vote here.
Yeah, who's throwing it out? That's like the worst possible option, just chucking it in the garbage. Unless, you know, I understand if you need to throw it out because you don't have any self-discipline like me sitting right here, as I can openly admit to being one of these people, and you just know you're going to eat it, you're going to snack on it, you're going to keep eating, you're going to have like 11 pieces in one sitting in a night, go ahead, maybe throw it out. But I feel like if you, as long as you're still going into your job these days and you're actually not working from home, take it into work, give it out. I don't know, maybe leave it on your front steps as the basket. I actually saw a video, Adam, today that I thought you would appreciate of someone's home camera video where, you know, the people who put out like a bucket of, and they're just like, take one, please.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually some little kid who's like a little menace, and he, Dennis the Menace type, who took the whole thing and just dumped it full out into his bag.
Oh.
And then he finished it off by flipping the bird. So it's just incredible video.
The answer for me would honestly be eat it later and then throw it out. I'm not going to finish it. Like, we have to throw out some of it because, you know, the kid, I can't give all that to my kids. I can't do it to myself. But I will eat, you know, I will eat for a few days. I'm eating Halloween candy for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Jacob, how about you? What's your Halloween, tradition?
Eat it later. But my Halloween tradition is I like to party on Halloween. I like to find.
Oh, you know, wow.
I just love seeing everybody's costumes. You know what I mean? Like, it's fun to get in a group setting and just like see all the creativity.
What are you doing?
It's one of my favorite.
What do you do, Jacob?
We actually weren't able to go. So I'm actually really bummed about it because we just got to a new place and we've just been super busy and didn't get to do anything big this year. But
all right. So then let me talk to you about costumes. If you like people's costumes. So I'm going to, you know, dress up. but I'm wearing the shirt right now. And I'm just going to get you some images because you guys have never seen Revenge of the Nerds, right?
No.
All right. So So here's some images of Lewis Skolnick from Revenge of the Nerds. And like, I don't have like a plaid, you know, short sleeve button down, but I do have this shirt. Okay. And it has, it's a Lambda shirt, which is their fraternity.
Okay.
Now they don't wear this t-shirt, but it's got their logo on it. So it's a little obscure because people younger than me are probably not going to know it, but
right.
I'm going to tuck my shirt into, actually I have a picture that I took.
Perfect.
I'm going to tuck my shirt into my pants. I've got socks that go like halfway between my ankles and my knees. I actually have shorts. Tuck my shirt into my shorts. I'm going to do a side part. I don't know if you can see. I'm going to be just, you know, a nerd, basically. But I've got the
Lambda. You're just going to be yourself.
Yeah, but a little nerdier. I got the Lambda shirt on, and hopefully people will get it. Otherwise, it's going to be a terrible costume. But he also goes, he does this laugh that. So I'm going to break that out. I'm looking forward to it. All right, let's get to our five big topics. From bada bing, bada boom, DeAndre Swift, will his workload improve? I would certainly hope so. He had 5 carries and 5 catches. Jacob, what do you think? I mean, week one, he had 15 carries and 3 catches. I don't know if he's been healthy since then. What do you think about Swift's workload?
He was at least out there. He had 51% snap rate, 54% route involvement rate. And he was out there in the red zone as well. He had 50% red zone snap rate compared to 38% for Williams. But Williams got 3 touches. Swift had a touchdown catch, but didn't have any rushing attempts in the red zone. They weren't limiting him too much. And I think going forward, we'll see the rushing attempts be there. But it might be more of a split than we anticipated going into the year, which maybe that's fine. Like, as long as he's involved in the receiving game and like the offense is flowing, and they're keeping him healthy. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, Dan, what do you think about the workload for Swift? He can't survive on 10 touches, which is two straight games for him.
He can't survive, especially, you know, if the game with this defense the Lions have right now, and it's only going to get worse in my mind, at least not getting any better. It's hard to rely on them for, you know, a run heavy game script at any point. But I just feel like if I'm the Lions, why am I divvying up this workload all Swift when I know that Jamal Williams is capable back? He may not be as explosive, he may not be as efficient, but he's a capable back. And if I don't give Swift all those touches, maybe Swift won't keep getting injured, because throughout his entire career with the Lions, that's kind of the elephant in the room. He's been injured a lot, and maybe they feel like if they give him a larger workload, that's why he keeps getting injured, and they need to manage him for that standpoint. So I don't think they're going to all of a sudden turn this into a bell cow situation like we see with Travis Etienne in Jacksonville. Although, as Jacob mentioned, maybe we should put a halt to the Etienne hype, because if he could get hurt if he continues at this rate. But I mean, I don't see it changing anytime soon from the coaching standpoint. There's no real incentive in my mind to put him on the field when he's proven that he gets injured with the bigger workloads.
I mean, bigger workload is one thing, but 5 carries in his last 3 games, he has 5, 7, and 5 carries.
Right.
And some of that's been, you know, it's all been health. I don't know exactly about this week, I guess, but, you know, there's no reason why Jamal Williams should have twice as many carries as Swift. How many touches does he need to be a must start guy?
That's the question right there. That's a really good question. 12, I would say
15. I mean, he's so efficient.
15, if at least half are through the passing game, or at least 40% right. are through the passing game.
Yeah. And he'll, you know, he's got, let's see what he's got. He's got 13 catches in 4 games, and that's with leaving a couple of them early or not playing full snap shares. So it's really a tough one. I guess I'll ask you guys, how would you rank Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, Ramondre Stevenson?
Taylor Swift, Stevenson. I will probably go... Wow, that's tough.
That is tough. That's a good question.
I think I would go Taylor, Stevenson, Swift.
That's what I was going to say, too.
Yeah.
Well, I've got rest of season rankings coming out, and I think schedule will have something to do with it when it comes to ones this close. But
okay.
It's tough with Stevenson or with Swift right now.
All right, here's a question from Daniel. I'd love to hear your discussion of the state of the running back and wide receiver positions. Preseason, everyone said wide receiver was so deep, but it seems like there are more high-end running backs at this point than receivers. I find myself always flexing a running back because I have so many good ones. Dan, what do you think?
I think he's onto something. The state of the NFL, if you just look at the state of the NFL, and obviously it changed a little bit this week with scoring up slightly, or not slightly, a good chunk versus the rest of the season. But if defenses are going to continue to play this style of defense, keep everything in front of you, two safeties high, very few middle of the field close looks. And I mean, some defenses are still running middle of the field close with one high safety and pressuring. Like, there's like four, five, six that I can think of, but the rest of the league is doing is has a similar strategy to how to stop an offense and don't give up explosive plays. And so that means running backs will be way more useful, even just in check in the check down passing game, where they can also be an asset when you're facing that kind of defense. So I don't know. I think it, look, the NFL cyclical things change a lot, but with where the passing games are at across the league, and part of it again is like, what are we seeing? We're seeing some of the best quarterbacks in the league not playing at a high level. Tom Brady, and like some of the names that we've had through years that we've been able to count on to put up big passing game numbers, and that boosts up extra receivers who are startable, are not playing at that kind of level right now. So I think right now that he's definitely onto something. I mean, it's hard to make such a proclamation already, just 8 weeks into this year, but it feels like the running backs have more value than they've ever had before.
Yeah, the NFL, the last 5 years are the five highest yards per carry seasons, I think, in NFL history. And I think that's that doesn't separate running back versus quarterback. I think that has a lot to do with quarterbacks rushing more.
But it also has to do with the running backs, right? Because their teams are in back in the old days, it was a very run first heavy game plan over and over. So it was easier to stop the run when it's coming so often.
Yeah, maybe. I think I did it right. You go to Pro Football Reference, you go to NFL season game team averages, you sort by yards per attempt, and 2022 is the highest yards per attempt in NFL history. 4.5 yards per attempt. 2020 is number two at 4.4. But here's what I thought was interesting, though. I said this on the Thursday podcast, I believe. I use a number 14 PPR fantasy points for wide receivers as start worthy because usually that's the borderline 2-3. Like, you know, I think last year there were about 27 wide receivers. I'll tell you right now. There were 27 wide receivers last year who scored 14 or more who averaged 14 PPR fantasy points per game. 29 the year before that, 27 the year before that. So that's where you're on the cusp of being a start worthy wide receiver. So I just looked, how many 14 point averages do we have so far? We have 18 running backs, which is actually lower. It's been last 5 years, 19, 20, 20, 20, and 18 running backs averaging 14 PPR fantasy points, so a little bit lower. No Jonathan Taylor in there, no Ken Walker yet, no Travis Etienne. That'll change a little bit. But only 23 wide receivers are averaging that, and that's the fewest since 2018. Last 5 years, it's been 23, 27, 29, 27, now 23 wide receivers averaging 14 or more PPR fantasy points per game. That could change. There are obviously some guys that are not that could get in there, but there are probably some guys who are currently that could fall out of that. But wide receiver is worse. It's just wide receiver is worse this year. I don't know if running back is better. It feels better, but based on that stat I gave, it actually isn't, but it does feel better. You know, they've been pretty healthy this year, knock on wood. And then you've gotten these first and second year guys who are emerging. And yeah, I don't know. Jacob, what's your thought on running back and wide receiver, I guess?
What I looked at was the snap rates of the running back position. So in the first 4 weeks, I just used 70%. It's a sort of arbitrary perimeter, but that's where I used the cutoff. The number of running backs that were hitting that rate. In the first 4 weeks, it was not higher than 10 in any given week. The average was 9.2 running backs were playing at least 70% of the snaps. Over the last four, it's been 9 or higher every single week. We've had 12, 15, 11 in the past 3 weeks. And so we're just seeing more running backs getting more of like a bell cow role. We're seeing these Travis Etienne's, Ramondre Stevenson's, even Eno Benjamin for a few weeks. You know what I mean? Like those types of guys are stepping into a bell cow role where previously there might have been some sort of a split. And I think that's the biggest difference outside of just really bad quarterback play, like we've already hit on, like Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford. All these guys are playing much worse than we're accustomed
huge.
To. But yeah, I think it is. I track the snap rates, route involvement rates at running back and tight end every single week. And so like I've just noticed more and more running backs. Basically, that tweet I can normally fit in one tweet easily, and I keep having to make it two. And I'm like, what's going on? And there's just more running backs playing more, and that's good for fantasy.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to our third topic here from RC3. Dak Prescott will never be a 300 yard passer, and pass interference needs to change to 15 yards. I have so many thoughts on pass interference. It's the worst part of football. It is so poorly officiated. I hate the underthrown ball that leads to a pass interference. it's rewarding bad quarterback play. And of course it needs to be 15 yards. Of course it does. The NFL is so dumb about pass interference. They tried to review it. They were too dumb to review it properly. They got rid of it. Like, give me a break. Pass interference is the best sport in the world. It's my favorite. I love the NFL. Pass interference is the worst part of the NFL other than injuries. Okay, now the other thing is Dak Prescott will never be a 300-yard passer. What do you think about that, Dan Schneier?
Which one? About the pass interference or the
I don't care. What, if you disagree with me on pass interference, I don't want to hear it because I will snap at you and nobody wants that.
What makes you think I don't want that snap? That's exactly what I do want. You should have not said that. Now I want to say everything that will make you snap, but I'll be nice and I won't lead to the snap.
No, you can wait, whatever. Weigh in on whatever you like. Dak Prescott, no. Pass interference. It's the underthrown ball that drives me crazy. Quarterback makes a terrible pass. Cornerback is trailing the receiver. Receiver on the underthrown ball has to jump into the cornerback. The cornerback has no choice. He has no clue what to do. There's nothing he can do. He's running at 20 miles per hour one way. What is he supposed to do? And he gets called for pass interference and is a spot foul. Awful. Awful.
Yeah, you actually saw one of the most heady plays by a corner that I've never really seen this week with Julian Love when Tyler Lockett beat him in the end zone. And Love was trailing, and instead of just doing what all these other corners do, try to make a play on the ball, they can't get their head around, it's an auto flag. He just kind of waves his arms in the air and gets out of the way.
Yeah.
It was an amazingly heady play. But you're right, it is something that should be officiated a bit differently. The problem with the spot with the 15-yarder for me, Adam, is there are some times where a cornerback is beat and just tackles the guy.
That's a spot foul. That's a spot foul. That's fine.
So you wanted to be subjective.
Yeah, it's like, remember when you said the 5-yard and the 15-yard face mask?
Okay.
And when you have the egregious intentional pass interference, that's a personal foul. That's a spot foul. Otherwise, it's a 15-yard penalty.
Oh man, I have such a problem with the idea of making this game even more subjective for these horrific referees that are just like terrible across
the
league.
No, they're fine. I'm sure it's a very hard job to do. That is a tough play to officiate, but it's a bad rule.
Yeah,
Jacob's just sipping a Mai Tai over there, just taking it all in.
As far as the Dak comment, I think there's some validity to it, because when Dak was tossing these 300-plus yard games at a consistent pace before this injury a few years ago, it had a lot to do with the Dallas Cowboys defense playing at a very, very poor level. They were one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Now they're arguably the best, if not one of the best defenses in the NFL. So that does change game script, and it does lead to situations where the Cowboys are not going to be as pass heavy, and they're going to want to lean on the run game more often because they don't need to be as pass heavy. So I think there is definitely some validity there, especially when you take Amari Cooper off the field and try to replace him with like the Michael Gallups of the world.
Jacob, one thing that bothers me from a Dak Prescott perspective, they've got 9 games left after their bye. 7 of those 9 games, you know, why don't we remove week 18, right? So they have 8 games left, fantasy season. 6 of those 8 games are against teams that are 20th or worse in scoring. So they have a schedule that's good for the running backs and bad for Dak Prescott. When you get too wrapped up in schedule, it could certainly let you down. Like, I didn't think that he would score 29 points against the Bears, but to be fair, he did it on 27 pass attempts, right? So he's thrown 29, 25, and 27 pass attempts in 3 games. They have arguably the best defense in football, and they have a very favorable schedule from a defensive standpoint. They're facing the Vikings, they're facing the Eagles, and I don't see another team that's definitely going to put up points against them. So, you know, what do you think? Is Dak a safe start, or would you try to maybe sell him after this performance, Jacob?
I think I would try to sell him. I think the points you make up, or both you guys made about the defense are good.
Great.
And it's great, even. Yeah. It's just a volume issue. And, you know, if it's not going to improve, then, like, he is going to have to be hyper efficient like he was this week to be a top 10, top 12 guy going forward from a projection standpoint. Because I don't like the pieces that he's throwing to either. Dalton Schultz is, like, finally starting to look healthy, but, like, we can't get a ceiling game from CeeDee Lamb, no matter what the circumstances. That's been so frustrating. Because his underlying volume is so good, and like Jalen Tolbert can get on the field, and there's just no one else. Like Michael Gallup is not it.
Yeah.
I'll say this about the Dak situation. The one thing to keep an eye on is they were very, very hesitant when he came back from the injury originally, from the ankle injury, to run him and use him like they used him in the past as a rusher, as a threat, as a runner. Then this past week, during the week, Jerry Jones, Cowboys owner, who the only owner in the NFL, he's the only combo of anyone who has any power in the NFL who gives away game plans just to the media. He just says things that end up happening. So it's wild. It's just crazy. You never see it with any of these other guys, but he basically said, we're going to want to use Dak more as a runner this week. And that's going to be something we work into the game plan. And he followed through on it. Dak actually, I think, had 33 yard rushing, an extra 3.3 fantasy points, which helps a lot to build a floor and really add to a ceiling potential as well. So if that continues going forward and they kind of take the training wheels off and they just say, look, we can't worry about him getting re-injured. We just have to use him, his skill set to the best of our abilities. That could boost his floor at least a little more.
Yeah. Jerry Jones is so funny. I mean, yeah. You really can take him at his word. He just gives away insider information all the time.
Crazy.
All right. Jade Richardson says, what happened to the Raiders and partially Josh Jacobs? The Raiders got shut out, guys, at New Orleans. Two fantasy points for Derek Carr. Josh Jacobs had 43 rushing, 11 receiving yards, two catches, 10 carries. They didn't get past midfield until late in the fourth quarter, and that was with the starters out. Jacob, what happened to the Raiders?
One thing I noticed was Derek Carr was pressured a lot. He was pressured on 41% of his dropbacks, and I've actually liked attacking the Saints defense because they're just not getting pressure at all, and nothing changed from the Saints schematically. They only blitz 17% of the time, which is right in line with their season average. And yeah, they had the fifth lowest pressure rate entering week seven, but that didn't stop the Raiders. And so that was a huge problem. I wouldn't worry about the usage for Josh Jacobs. He played 79% of the snaps in the first half. He had a 69% route involvement rate in the first half, which is elite. Like last week, only four running backs were above 61%. So I think with better game scripts, he'll be fine. And then yeah, Devontae, he had an illness coming in. He also didn't play in the fourth quarter. Obviously, it was bad before that, but I think that did affect things.
You had a theory there, Mr. Schneier?
I wouldn't say I have any kind of theory on this. I think Jacob laid out the points perfectly, at least as far as how I feel on this situation. I do have something that caught my attention that I wanted to bring up, a little bit of breaking news, thanks to Thomas Schaefer.
Oh, come on. Yeah, I have a great Raiders theory. You can't just railroad my great Raiders theory.
I don't want to railroad your Raiders theory. I forgot. You did mention at the top of the show you have a great Raiders theory. All right, let's not talk about the breaking news. Let's get to Adam's great
breaking news. Waiver wire fodder Rashad Bateman is going to miss several weeks. No, it is big news, obviously. So,
well, also, Mark Andrews should be okay.
That's Mark Andrews is kind of like a day-to-day situation. He's not too beat up. Rashad Bateman's going to miss some time.
Well, let's not bury the lead. Let's get to this theory.
Yeah, there was one other news item that came across. All right, fine. Here's my theory about the Raiders. They had the flu. They did. They had four guys, including Devontae Adams, who missed practice during the week with an illness. I think they said it was going around. Adams, I think, was just not himself. He had obviously a terrible game. Darren Waller didn't play. Adams had one catch for 3 yards on five targets. He was being covered by first and second year wide receivers, Alante Taylor and Paulson Adebo. And I thought they did an excellent job on him. I watched every throw from Derek Carr. And, you know, he's the best route runner in the world, basically. He gets open all the time, and he just didn't seem like he was himself. So now you're talking about very little Devontae Adams, no Darren Waller. And the pressure got to him as well. So a really off day from them, but this was their flu game, except it wasn't a good flu game, but at the very least, we know that Devontae Adams was sick basically all week. So I think it's possible that he just wasn't himself.
I'll say this too about the Raiders as far as rest of season and full season. If you look at the numbers and unpack them, Derek Carr on targets 20 plus yards down the field has been awful. As bad as he was before he took a big step, I felt like under Gruden, he took a really big step on film as a passer. He was the check down king before Gruden got there, and he started to really utilize the intermediate and deep areas of the field under Gruden, and he really felt comfortable within that system. He grew within that system. Now brand new system with McDaniels, and he's regressed back to this player who needs to check down a lot. He's not connecting on passes 20 plus yards down the field. Super inefficient in the intermediate and deep areas of the field. And so I honestly feel like the system change more so than anything has really hurt the Raiders pass game.
Jacob, topic number five is DJ Moore, a must start wide receiver. This one's from Bango. As long as PJ Walker is at quarterback, is DJ Moore a must start wide receiver?
Hell yeah. He's wide receiver 8 since week 8. He has a 36% target share since that time. That's third
since week 7
in the NFL. 58. Was since no, week six, last week 3 weeks.
Okay. Oh, you said week eight. So
that he wide receiver eight since week six, my bad.
Okay.
58% air yardage share during that time. That's first. So like that clearly profiles as my start player and is backed by super exciting underlying data too. 48% first down target share. So 48% of Carolina's total targets coming on first down, whether he's on the field or not, have gone to DJ Moore over the past three games. They're really being intentional about getting him the ball. They're running more slants and screens and just short yardage, and they're getting involved in the slot more. And that's what they did in week six and seven. And then week eight, they just moved him back to his normal role and still kept targeting him on 30% of his routes. And the result was 251 air yards, which is only been topped by Chris Olave this year. It's, I think, the sixth highest since the start of 2021 in a single game. So that's all really exciting. I don't know if PJ Walker is going to keep playing this well. That throw he made was insane.
Yeah. He also missed DJ Moore wide open on a deep ball. He was up and down. Yeah.
I'm so glad to see this because, like, I don't know. Earlier in the year, there was some conjecture on, like, is DJ Moore the guy we thought he is? And it's like, yes, yes, he is. Like, he's a stud. And, like, now we have validation that, like, he is a stud. He can do it. It's not like he got some huge quarterback upgrade. He just didn't have to play with Baker or Sam Darnold.
Yeah. I questioned his route running several weeks ago, but he was open a lot in this game, and he completely, he had a 29-yard catch and run where he just schooled this cornerback, Cornell Armstrong. Now, a couple things here. Not only did the Falcons give up the most fantasy points to wide receivers, but they were very beat up in the secondary. That's basically as good of a matchup as you're going to get. And they get them again in 2 weeks, but Cincinnati is much better against wide receivers. Baltimore is kind of hit or miss. Denver is a nightmare matchup. And then you have a bye. Seattle is pretty good against wide receivers. They've got a good young secondary. So the matchups are going to get tougher. But I can't really argue with him being a must start because his target share is so high and he's good. And we just talked about how weak wide receiver is compared to previous seasons. Dan, what do you think? Final word.
I would say it's a buy situation as well. You can buy here for as long as Walker's the quarterback. And I think that's going to last for a little while now. They said already named him as starter for this week. Baker Mayfield experiment. They have nothing tied to Baker. They didn't draft Baker. So I don't think there's any real push to get him back in. And they're a more competitive team with PJ Walker. So, yeah.
All right. Happy Halloween, guys.
Happy Halloween. Okay. I got to be a little more festive next year, Adam. I got to go to a party. I got to dress up. I got to do something.
You think so?
Yeah, I think after going on all these shows for the last 2 weeks and hearing how excited people like you are getting about Halloween, and Jacob said it was his favorite holiday of the year. It was a bold take to call Halloween your favorite holiday of the year. So now I feel like I got to step it up a little bit.
Oh, look at this guy. This guy's coming in here and just trashing us in the chat.
Oh, no.
Hates our show.
Dang. Oh, God.
Yeah, just hates us. Daniel, what's going on here, Daniel? Why you hate us so much?
I've got a set on Derek Carr. I looked up his off-target rate on throws that came deep, 15 or more yards, because I was curious when Dan said that I haven't watched him enough to know. And it is the ninth worst in the NFL, which is bad. But I wanted to really, the stat is there's one player above 37%. He has a 40% off-target rate on deep targets. It's not a quarterback you would guess. It's one of the better quarterbacks in the league.
35% off target rate.
40% of his attempts that have traveled 15 or more air yards have been off target.
Oh, it's not. Is it Justin Fields?
No, it's a good quarterback.
This is a great stumper. Oh. I know Mahomes has been bad with deep.
Oh, I'm going to say Aaron Rodgers.
No, Rodgers is actually pretty.
It's not Mahomes, right?
No,
he just hasn't targeted him a bunch downfield, but he doesn't have bad numbers. Let's think. It's not Brady.
Geno's.
The league average is 25%. He's at 40.
Off target.
40% off target percentage. A good quarterback. How is this stumping? Could it be Stafford?
No, but he's third worst.
Yeah, I thought
he's had a bad year.
So that wasn't a terrible guess.
And if you move it up to 20 plus yards, it's 50%. The league average is 31%.
Okay, worst deep ball thrower in football, basically.
It's Lamar Jackson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he has missed a lot of deep ball throws. A lot.
All right, here's Daniel's beef. Ask FFT, yes, wide receiver is worst. When this channel says to play Sutton, Devontae Smith, Wandale Robinson, and my bench wide receiver of Rondell Moore, Darnell Mooney, Allen Robinson all scored at least 10 fantasy points.
He all capsed us. He
And how many exclamation? I can't even count the amount of exclamation points we have there. That's at least 10.
Who are the bench receivers? Darnell Mooney, Allen Robinson, and who?
Rondale Moore.
Rondale.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I would have started Rondale over Wandale. I have no regrets of starting Sutton and Devontae Smith.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really was, maybe over Wandale, but no one was suggesting that you would start those other three. I don't think that's realistic, really.
Yeah.
Like, sorry. That
well, listen, buddy. Thanks for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Yelling at us.
Have a good day, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow with the Waiver Wire on Fantasy Football Today.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.